Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi there. Thanks for joining us here on a Friday, and a great Friday for me because I get to do this program with Dr. Sherry Keffer. Hi, Sherry.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
Dr. Alice Benton.
Howdy, y'all.
And the bonus Becky Brown right here.
Hello. Yeah. Happy Friday.
Yeah.
I've been talking to a lot of Texans lately, Steve, and I like your y'all. The rest of us are missing out on that.
Yeah. It is an interesting word. So Becky brought into the studio some help, some thoughts about what people are going through. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, COVID and politics and the weather and homeschooling not by choice and everything else that people are struggling with. And I know, Steve, you just did a Going Deeper series on depression.
Yep.
There's a lot of people that are struggling right now, and we want to help you. We can help you. And I think one of the biggest challenges is recognizing that you need help. What does that look like? Doesn't mean that you have to, you know, have a complete nervous breakdown.
Nope.
You know, but it could be that you just notice that I'm not feeling as good as I normally would, or maybe my anxiety is kind of taking over. I'm sure Sherry and Alice, you guys can speak to some of the folks that you've been serving in your practices about what they may be struggling with, or even offer the radio audience some tips about how to deal with the struggles that we're having right now.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if this is going to help or ruffle feathers or whatever, but I've been struggling. And I was just talking to Kyle, my husband, this weekend. And I never thought I'd be living in a time like this. And I have found, I think, comfort in a weird sort of way by trying to put my shoes back in the time of Christ when the disciples were like running with them and Jesus was out there like healing people and speaking to multitudes and they're all high-fiving each other and things were good. And then like everything went sideways.
Mm.
And
sure did.
Peter denied him three times and they lost heart. They felt their world turn upside down. There was lots of upheaval. And there were Pharisees that wanted to kill Jesus, right? There was just so much going on. And I said to myself, I thought, you know what? I have never thought about that this is how they felt back then. Mm-hmm. And God has got a plan. Just like he had a plan and Jesus had to be crucified in order for us to have salvation. I don't like how it feels right now. I'm not going to be in denial over the fact that it ruffles my feathers, but I have had to find some solace in believing that there is a God that even when it doesn't feel good, God is moving heaven and hell to bring out his good for us who know him. And and right now I'm just talking to people about Jesus because who knows? We might be closer to the end than we've ever imagined we'd be. And,
well,
wow.
It probably feels like that for a lot of folks, too. There are some folks that are feeling that exact way. Thanks, Sherry. We have a tip. We have
six tips
to help you find contentment in crisis, and it can be the beginning of just that research project. As you say, you can call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE and get a copy for yourself or even ask for help because we have counselors all over the country that can connect with you and help you get on a process of healing and wellness.
Yeah, and just a simple oversimplification. What you focus on really has a lot to do with how you feel. And sometimes we're beyond a place where we can even choose what we focus on. We're out of control. But I'm telling you, if you focus on every potential horrible thing that may happen, you are going to be miserable, ineffective, and God wants to help you with that.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back, and we have an amazing brain trust here, Dr. Alice Benton, Becky Brown, Dr. Sherry Keffer, and really glad that you're with us today. And we do believe that it is a difficult time. A great thing is are these little tips, six tips of finding contentment in a crisis. When we're content, we don't just roll over and play dead. Now that we're in a good state of mind, we can make some very, very important decisions where we don't end up in the same place we always do. And what a great thing it is to look at your life and say, I see a pattern here. Maybe there's a different choice than I can make. I was talking yesterday about regrets. They can either be a symbol of your failure in life and a symbol to you that this is who you are, or they can be these little directives. You made a mistake, you regret it. Okay, let's don't do that anymore. It can signal, the regret can signal it's time to take a different path. You get to choose. You can be identified by the things that you regret, or you can take a new strategy in your life that leads you to a different outcome. And New Life, for 32 years, has been talking about different strategies. Mm-hmm. Not the hyper-spiritual strategy, not the anti-spiritual strategy, but the God-given, Christ-centered, foundational, biblical truth strategy of surrender, and then once we surrender, we accept responsibility to live the life that God has called us to live and get rid of anything that stands in the way of us living who God called us to be. Let's go to Isabella, Los Angeles, California. She listens on the internet. We're glad that she does. Isabella, you are on with three women and a man. How are you? Wow, that's a very loud background noise you got going there. Let's see if we can
is
hear you.
Is it better now?
Well, just ask us a question, and let's see if we can hear you.
Okay, I'm just going to pull over. Hi, so my name is Isabella. I've been married for 14 years. I found out in January through a healer that my husband is a sex addict. Sorry, I'm probably going to cry. And I got him to see a CSAT. He had covert emotional incest by his mother when he was a child. He told me he needs a divorce from me because of my sex issues, and we're in the process of divorce. He got heavy into cocaine and MDMA recently, and he almost died two times. I just wanted to know, I'm fine. I'm doing brain spotting. I'm doing trauma work. I go to therapy. I do so much for myself, and I'm going to be okay. He's resisting any kind of help. He dropped his CSAT. He stopped his sponsor. He stopped SAA. I wanted to get him into Speaking Integrity Rehab Center with Dr. Rob Weiss, but he called and spoke with them, but he's just saying he doesn't want to pay that much money. He's afraid to go. Is there anything I can do, like, at all to help save him so he doesn't overdose and die?
Well, real quick here, have you thought about our little Saturday experience called Every Man's Battle?
I heard about that. I can totally mention it to him. I absolutely will. He's kind of, every time I bring things up to him, he's very resistant, but I could definitely mention that.
Well, there's nothing that is more affordable that's real live treatment that can produce more in a short length of time. So a lot of the objections that he has, they don't apply to that experience.
Yeah.
And what I would be saying to him is, before you try to defend or deflect or whatever, I just want to say to you that I found something that I think that if you want to stay alive, if you won't have any hope for our marriage, that it's the least thing that you could do. And, you know, you talk about the drugs and all that he's using. Well, when we begin recovery in the area of sexual integrity, these other things, the need for them starts to diminish, and then we specialize in recovering from them too. But I tell you, there's so much help for him, but he's going to have to be the one to say, okay, I really want this help. But I don't think it's going to occur with you kind of lightly saying, what about this or that? I think it's you saying, this is the least that you can do if you want us to go forward, if you want to save your life. At least do this, and then we can talk about the future. Any thoughts from any of you other women here? What are you thinking?
I wish he could see your heart and how much you're really trying to save him.
And I know.
It's so painful, isn't it? When we love somebody and we're actually watching them self-destruct. You're taking me back to a time, Isabella, with my husband, Connor, who was involved with prostitutes and multiple affairs, and he was not wanting to change. He was not wanting to heal. He stopped going to recovery groups. No matter what I put in front of him, he didn't. If he started it, he stopped it. It wasn't his choice. And I guess I want you to know I've got grief with you. I'm hurting with you for this. My question to you would be this, is what part of you, I know you're going to be okay. I'm glad you're doing all your treatment. Yeah. I'm so proud of you. I want to hug you. I'm like, this girl is, she knows. She knows what she needs to take care of her. But I have one curious question. Yeah. What part of you feels responsible for the choices of his that you can't control?
I know I'm not responsible, but the thing is, I'm the only person in the entire world. Nobody, his mother, his brother, nobody knows anybody. So I'm the only person, and now that he's divorcing me, I'm going to be out of his life, and I can already see myself not caring as much, and that's great, but it makes me a little bit scared because I know he has to hit that rock bottom before he comes back, and I'm like, well, maybe just before I go, I can try to give him some baby steps and maybe just help remove the shame or the denial or just something. I know it's not my fault, but as the only person in the world who knows, and as he almost died twice, I feel like I should try to help him just as a friend.
Isabella, well, can I ask a question, Sherry? Isabella, why is it that you're the only one that knows? You're carrying his world on your shoulders. Okay.
I know. Well, I've told some of my friends and my parents and stuff like that, but nobody in his world knows. Like, I haven't told his parents. I haven't told his friends because I don't feel like it's my place to.
Well, but here's what I want to suggest this to you. If it's a matter of life and death, it would be really important to let somebody in his world know. Because
Amen.
If you are not going to be with him, and something, God forbid, happens to him, you're going to have this weight of guilt. And it's as an informed, you know, we have to give informed consent and all that kind of stuff. We always let the people know if you're going to hurt yourself, we're going to let somebody know because we want you to be okay. And Isabella, that may be the hardest step that you take is to have a conversation with his parents. And just say, I haven't told you this because I don't feel like it's my place, it's his story, but I'm concerned for his life. And, you know, like Steve said, it would be good to suggest that he goes to every man's battle. But right now, I think the bigger weight on your shoulders is his life. And you have to let somebody in his world know. Yes, he's going to be mad, but I'd rather have him mad and alive than not.
I want to get you to think of it this way, Isabella. Do you have any children?
No, just a dog.
Okay. Well, can you imagine, even with your dog gets hit by a car, and someone said, well, I saw your dog playing in the street. I didn't feel like it was my place to call the dog over to the curb or to call you or go up to the door and say, hey, your dog's in the street. It does not make any sense that you are fearing for his life, you're about to be less of his life if he divorces you, but you don't want to tell his parents. Now, I'm going to ask you this. If there's any other reason other than it's not my place. Can you think of any other reason that you might not be wanting to tell his parents, other than this thing of it's not my place to tell them?
Well, he doesn't have a dad, and his mom is super mother enmeshed with him. She is a very emotionally immature person, and all it would do would probably be kill her, and then he will just lie to her and tell her that because he's mm-hmm. the biggest manipulator on the planet, right? I mean, he's an addict.
Well,
he will manipulate
well, here's
her
what
and
I'm
tell
hearing.
Her that I'm lying.
Here's what I'm hearing. You're predicting the future.
Yeah.
And I don't think yes. you can do that. You don't okay. know what's going to happen. So what do you have to do? Okay. The next right thing. The next right thing isn't playing this out in the mind and the heart of everybody. The next right thing, I think, is telling the people that have the most influence on him, because especially you're not going to have much influence on him. So I would really encourage you to get on the phone and say, I have to tell you what's going on, because I think you'd okay. want to know.
Isabella,
what about this? Could I say,
I think you feel bound because you made some sort of agreement with him, explicitly or implicitly, that you would keep this secret because he asked you to.
Yeah.
And you think to some yeah. extent that it's in his best interest, but it does lay upon you more responsibility than is yours to bear. Your mm-hmm. silence keeps you the only one who can help him, apparently. But that's not true.
Yeah. Right.
It is more loving to change your mind and perhaps even, I don't know if this is safe to do, but your conscience may need to do this. You may need to inform him somehow, I can no longer keep this silence. It's not good for me and it's not good for you. It may not be safe to do that, but your conscience may need to, so I want you to pray about that. It is more loving to reveal his secret than it is to keep his secret, because it
yes.
limits the help he can get.
Yes.
Okay, could I say something like this? Like, you know, as I'm leaving your life and I'm the only person who knows, I would only feel comfortable either if we told your mom or I told your mom or your best friend or whatever, or we could get you some kind of help. Like, you could go to this every man thing, or you could start, you know, going to rehab, or just somehow.
No, Isabella, it can't be either or.
No?
It cannot
okay,
be either
okay,
or.
Okay.
It won't be sufficient to only not tell if he goes to treatment or if he doesn't go to treatment.
Okay.
And I would even go as far as to say it's not even a conversation you have with him. Going back to what you said, Sherry, when you were referring to Connor, he didn't want help. He wasn't interested. And that's the message that you've been given, Isabella. And here's what we're talking about. As you leave his life, you're letting go of the responsibility of keeping him alive. And that's been, you know, the secret keeper, you've been his protector for a long time. It's a very common thing that happens in relationships like yours. And so what we want to empower you to do is let go of the handles and say,
okay.
I'm more interested in you being safe than me trying to make you do what you're supposed to do. And I would say if his mom is unhealthy, like Steve said, you don't need to predict the future. Let her know. Let one of his friends know. Let, you know, somebody that you know that has influence in his life, and just say, hey, as I leave, I'm just letting you know he's not in a good place. And then you pray for him. And then you trust him to his own processes, but you can't make anybody do anything. That's the frustrating part.
You know what I heard you say? I heard you say we. Mm-hmm. And one of the hardest things I had to do, Isabella, was transition from we to I. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this. I care about you, but I can't keep the secret. And I am going to need to let some people know. You can say that or you can just do it.
Right?
You can just do it. Mm-hmm. Because I had to let people know about Connor. But when I did that, I grabbed a hold of this rope called Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. and I held on to my Heavenly Father like my life depended on it. And I was no longer a we. And so you're going to walk this out. But God is going to provide for him. He will bring people. They might even be drug dealers or prostitutes that are going to help wake him up. Right?
Okay.
But your laughter is lighter because you're going to let some other people know.
And you're going to begin to build your own, you're going to build your own group of women who are going to be part of your journey forward as well, that are going to be healthy and supportive and loving.
And we always have to figure out, if I'm not going to be the one to prevent self-destruction, what am I going to do with my life?
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. And
I wanted to mention something, Steve, if I could, because my mind has been thinking about Isabella. You know, my statement about we to I, you know, I can say that here and y'all can hear me today, and it's like a millisecond that comes out of my mouth, and you go, okay, cool. But let me tell you something. That journey from we to I took me months and even, I want to be honest, years. And I still have a vulnerability of becoming a we instead of an I. I went into my own codependency 12-step group in order to take a really good long look at how my family of origin set me up to be a caretaker, a rescuer. And I lived in a world of we. I felt very responsible to fix, control, change, heal, and so learning that I had my own needs, because I would give myself up in order for somebody else to save them. Like Connor and I were married for years with all this sexual activity going on, and I can now look back at that and go, wow, my codependency played into, I believe, what kept me silent. It kept me holding secrets. It kept me in the we zone in a very unhealthy, dysfunctional way. And I love the results that I've gotten by going through CODA, and I have a more clear path when I feel myself being pulled into the we, and I'm like, wait a second, why am I feeling responsible for somebody else's chaos, and why am I stepping into it? And it's helped me learn to have my own identity, my own love for myself, and I can be more honest and less burdened by somebody else's choices.
One of my favorite definitions of codependency is living your life and at the end of it, seeing someone else's life flash before you, you know, because you lose yourself. Yeah. And like you just said, Sherry, you just don't even realize that you're in that mode. And I think Isabella spoke that so clearly. I think we should send her a copy of your book, Sherry, Intimate Deception. I think, you know, it is an unwinding process. And
we'll send it.
It takes time. But I think any of the listeners who recognize, hey, yeah, I've lost myself in my relationship, there's help. Just begin today by looking at it. Life Recovery has so much that talks about that as well. So
it's kind of a double bind, too, because you lose yourself, but you think what you're doing is preserving and protecting yourself. You're doing a good thing for you, but not, and not good for others. All right.
If anybody is in a relationship with somebody who's struggling with drug or alcohol addiction, we have treatment centers across the country that we can connect you with to get them help. So you can just call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Okay. Let's go to George from the Bay Area in California. KFAX is the station. Hi, George. How are you today?
Oh, I'm terrible.
Oh, no. What's going on? What's going on?
Well, I'm living in hell while living in a body. In calling the person on the other end of the line at your center, I told them that my head is not good. I feel like I have several disagreements with you, and I think you're one of the wisest people I've ever heard, and I listen to you on TV, but you disagree with me about a woman standing up to her daughter who's getting married to a woman, but that's not important because that's not part of my thing. But I feel like I've been possessed, and I don't know any other way other than to have something like an exorcism to get out of it. And I've tried to call people like John MacArthur and various other people, and they're not even willing to consider that that's possible, and they don't know how to deal with it. And you seem to put a person like that into a different category and say that, well, I think it's more probable that you're, you tell some people that they're not possessed, and I don't know any other way to say it than this.
Let me just address it, because I actually don't tell people that they're not possessed. And in fact, earlier in my life, we had a woman live with us who thought she was demon-possessed. What I do say is, based on statistics and people's problems and history, it's not likely that a person is demon-possessed, or it's more likely that it is a problem we can address other than just exorcism. But here's what I told the person that lived with us, who thought that her emotional problems, which resulted in very early abuse of their children by this husband she chose. I said, okay, let's go and have an exorcism. Let's go find a person in the Catholic Church who has been identified as qualified to do an exorcism. And let's see if that provides relief. And that's what we did. And when the symptoms came back, she was willing then to go and get the therapy, including medication that she never, ever wanted to take, and her life turned around. But it could have happened that she went to that Catholic priest who was qualified to do exorcism. It could have been a different outcome. So I don't just think that there's only one way. We'll be back.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of 7 books, including Growth Has No Boundaries by Drs. John Townsend and Henry Cloud, Take Your Life Back by Steve Arterburn and Dr. Dave Stoop, and the Emotional Freedom Workbook. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back, and we're talking with George. And George, I want you to hear Sherry and Alice, what they have to think about a person, problems, potential for demon possession. Sherry, why don't you get us started here?
Yeah, hey, George, I love how frank and honest you are, and how honest you're trying to be with us, and that you are with yourself. I have worked with individuals who have had demonic attachments, like leeches. And I do everything first to make sure that there is not an underlying brain chemistry issue, because that can cause some hallucinations and those kind of things. And then we definitely talk about trauma. And I do a lot of work with people. But if there is something lingering and it feels otherworldly, I've got a couple that I work with here that are in the deliverance ministry, and they're seers. Some of you may go, what are you talking about? Well, I'm not a seer. That's not my gift. But they actually go in and very respectfully peel that bloodsucker enemy off. And I introduced Alice to them. And yes. And because, you know, we do have a handful of people that we come into. And so I say, if that's something you believe you're struggling with, then go get the goods, my friend. Go to someone who that is what they do and let them help you.
And George, there's actually a lot that we can do to clean out the garbage that attracts demonic presence. Because these things that I'll list out for you, they make us more vulnerable to demonic activity. My own unconfessed sin, my anger and my resentment that I allow to stir and boil inside of me, and my unprocessed trauma, all of that leaves any of us more vulnerable to demonic temptation. And to Jerry use this phrase, demonic attachment, where the Bible talks about this, Ephesians 4:27. When we have ongoing anger that we don't address, it leaves the devil a foothold. But we can be strengthened against it through the processes of confession and forgiveness and the therapeutic help to deal with the trauma that we've been through.
So what do you think, George?
I heard that, but I've never come across such ongoing anger as I feel now after what appeared or sounded or wasn't even literal words that came into my mind, and something took possession of my head before he brought in this whole slew of entities, whether it was 30 or 30,000 in addition to himself. And now I feel like I've been living in hell, and I'm cut away from love, peace, joy, everything. But anger can come, and so I'm afraid to be around people because I think anger could erupt in me at any moment.
Yeah.
I'm now angry with God in addition to the devil because I put up with it for a year thinking he was just testing me, and then... But then I began to call
so
them
here's
names
the
too.
So George, here's the thing: when we get in a place like that, we cannot do the work on our own. You heard Sherry and Alice both talk about how they connect with others. You heard Steve say the same thing. We are going to connect you with an area counselor, and then that's going to be part of the process. You need help, and you need to trust the process with someone and work out all of the anger, all of those things that you're struggling with. And, you know, ask the counselor about connecting with somebody like what Steve said, you know, a Catholic priest that might have expertise in exorcism. It is going to be a relational process of healing. It will not be you by yourself at home trying to figure this out. And we'll be praying for you, but we're going to connect you with somebody that can help you.
Okay, two things before we move on. One is, if you're truly possessed by demons, they're not going to influence you to go get help. They're going to influence you right. not to get help.
Right.
And so what you have to do is you have to have the courage to let somebody help you do what you may be incapable of doing. If you're possessed by a demon or you have been influenced negatively or by evil, you simply must be willing to get all sorts of help and not isolate. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get in really big trouble, where mm-hmm. we say, I'm just going to be by myself. I'm not going to go to church. I'm not going to have friends. I'm not going to do anything. Boom. That's where somehow you have to work through that and say, okay, I've got to get some help because this has resulted in something really crummy. And I want you to hang on. We want to get you some contact information here. Maybe we can help you find a resource that could really be very, very helpful for you.
Talk about influence. Larry just walked in the room.
He did, yeah.
He is a man of influence.
Larry, how you doing?
Doing good, thanks. Doing
what do you have good. For us today?
Well, we've got a workshop coming up in a few weeks. It's February the 13th, Intimacy and Marriage.
Yes.
And while I seek support for folks to keep this ministry going, God's doing the heavy lifting, but we need you to help us. Mm-hmm. Here's what somebody said from a recent workshop. I really appreciate the level of transparency of each speaker. I came feeling hopeless about a relationship without intimacy for decades. I now see a light bulb on in my husband's thinking. Maybe only 5 to 10 watts, but at least there's been some insight. I'm no longer willing to maintain a mockery of God's plan for marriage, putting up a front for others, but full of emptiness. I'm continuing to hope and believe all things in love that God will be faithful to complete the good work that began this weekend. And the reason I love that is it's so realistic. You know, we offer these workshops and we brag a little bit about all the wonderful things that God's doing there. But that's just the beginning. That's the springboard. There's a lot of work to be done after those workshops. But whatever reason you need to come, whether your marriage has been without intimacy for decades or you just need a little checkup on some communication skills or you've filed for divorce and that's it, we can help you with any of that. So please come. Please give. Please support a ministry that sees that God is a God of second chances and wants you to get back on track.
You know what I think of when we talk about intimacy in marriage, I think about all the marriages that are just starting out.
Yeah.
And what a great opportunity if you're an engaged couple
you
could spend the day with us and it could make all the difference in the world. So call us and see what that's about.
Well, and then we have marriages that have been going for 20 to 30 years and they're struggling and they come to the weekend and they're just starting out. Like for the first time, they're starting to really get to know each other and care for one another, just like this woman you talked about.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the greatest transformations that we see is when people are transformed from thinking it's hopeless to having tremendous hope and then acting on that hope. And before you give up or before you think anything's hopeless, let us help you by calling 1-800-NEW-LIFE. And then, you know what happens is you get help and then you become a supporter. A lot of our support comes from people that we have helped, and we're so grateful to all of you who help us. So,
Steve, I also want to throw in a quick plug for Club New Life. And if you are considering giving, please consider a monthly giving program that we have. Call us at 800-NEW-LIFE and ask about it. It's a very meaningful thing for you, for the people that are getting the benefit from it, and for New Life. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate that. 1-800-NEW-LIFE is the number to call. And let's go to Becky from Athens, Georgia, listening on the Internet. Hi, Becky. How are you today? What's going on in your life? Becky. Wait. Oh, dear. Hold on.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. We sure can.
Okay, great. My question is, how can I reconnect with my son? And the background is he's 37. He's been pretty distant since he moved away from home, you know, a good long time ago. And he married a lady who doesn't really care for us because we're from different parts of the country. And she just, you know, she doesn't like the way, I don't know, the way Southerners live or something. Anyhow, friends have told me that maybe when he had children, maybe he would, you know, try to be closer to me. And he's the only child, so I've been praying for that. Well, they had a baby. I've been allowed to see him once because of COVID. But her family's been allowed to fly down from Minnesota and just stay with him for weeks, you know. And that kind of hurts. But anyhow, I think he's been looking for a reason to distance himself because he texted me Sunday morning and said he saw a political post because I'm conservative. He's not. And it embarrassed him. And he's sorry we had the same name. And he's going to cut off contact with me, and please don't ever call him again.
Becky, I'm going to interrupt because I want to ask you to think over the break about why he might have become distant around the time that he left home, because the politics play a role in this, but that distance far precedes the political side of things. Yeah. So think about what the injury in the home might have been and what your role was in that injury that led to the disconnection.
Well, I tell you, I just hate these situations where, you know, the husband's wife doesn't like mommy, and then everything, the grandkids, all this stuff gets thrown into the conflict. We'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. And Alice, you were talking about other things other than politics and reasons, and you definitely asked Becky to consider what it might be other than politics, right? Or how did you say
it? Yes, and in addition to politics. Yes. So, Becky, what preceded
well,
this disconnect?
His dad left when he was six, and so, but he saw him every week. He was always close to him. But I feel like there has been some resentment because since he's grown up, he's brought things up like he resented being brainwashed, being raised in the Christian church, making me think that's the only way to heaven. And now he says he's an atheist, and he brought up he resented that I told him before he could be anything he wanted to be because that wasn't true. And so I don't know what I did to make him resent me like that. You know, I wish I knew. I don't know. I mean, it was just the two of us,
well,
and I gave in to every whim, which is not good.
Well, let me share a thought with you. And this is, it's a very sad thing that happens in families where a dad leaves the family early in a young boy's life. And particularly when there's, in your case, he's your only son. That little boy at 6 years old, whether you like it or not, all of a sudden felt like, because men are providers and protectors, it's in their DNA when they come out of the chute, right? And so in that moment, your boy felt like he needed to be that little man of the house. And as moms, we can grow accustomed to this dynamic duo, and we can unknowingly, either knowingly or unknowingly, put our full weight down on them as our support, as a companion, as a conversation person. And that young boy grows up feeling enmeshed to his mom. Like mom is an amoeba, and he just kind of, he got swallowed up in it. There's a book by Dr. Ken Adams you might want to read. It's called Married to Mom. And it might help give you some insight into what your son's pushback might be about, because he may have to figure out how he's different or separate or unique from you. And if you get offended or hurt by that and don't understand his journey of trying to become his own person, and he doesn't have to take care of you. He knows you're going to take care of yourself. You know, sometimes I'll tell the young man, I'll say, you know, 35-year-old, 25, I'm like, you need to fire yourself from being your mom's caretaker, even in your own mind. Even though you may not do that, that burden he carries might be there. So that's just one thought, that it's a possibility.
Well, and I love that. I also think, Becky, that you have to recognize his resentment is his. And so the goal of reconnection with him is to be curious. He's told you the list of accusations, which in a grand scheme of things, not so bad. You know, I mean, we talked to so many people that there have been terrible wounds from parents. But, you know, to engage in a relationship with him at an adult level will be to be able to hear him and say, I'm sorry that you feel that way. I want to have connection with you. And then try to, you know, connect, not in a way that it's like all or nothing. Like, you know, I want to be there all the time. And just like you said, Steve, about, you know, his wife's family, you know, there may be an issue with that relationship as well. It's hard for him to manage to have these two significant women in his life. So it's multi-layered. I would encourage you to seek a counselor and, you know, try to process this and look for some way to connect with him.
Hmm. All right. So we're going to send her, you suggested a book, Cherry. But
we don't have it in our, it's by Ken Adams, Married to Mom. Yeah. But why don't we do How We Love?
I'm going to send that. How We Love is going to come your way. Hope that'll be a great blessing to you. It is the foundation of the workshop we do, Intimacy in Marriage. Now, I want to talk to you three women about this as we close out the program. I'm going to help some people here. Sometimes we know that what we want to do would feel good, but we know it's not the right thing to do. But we want to do it. Like, you know, we have, let's say your child is growing up, feel good for them to stay home, but you need to get them out the door, help them be independent. What is the best advice you can give someone who wants to do something that feels good to them or comfortable, but they know it's not healthy. What does that person need to know, do, or understand?
One portion of it is to have an idea of what you want the outcome to be. I think that in the example you just gave about parenting, if you're a parent and you can't bear the idea of your child growing up and leaving home, it's going to be really hard for you to make that transition. But if you get a vision of, I want to launch them strong, I want them to be healthy adults mm-hmm. that are going to make a good impact in the world, then your decisions won't always feel good, but it will be for the good. And that's just, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Alice? You were going to say something?
We need to confess our inability and that disconnection between what I want to do and what I'm actually doing. When we confess it to someone else and we allow them to help hold us accountable, it gives us the power, the resolve, and the determination to do differently than my heart of a mother wants to do. I want my children to be comfortable. So when I confess that to my life group, my safe group, they motivate me and they encourage me to do better and to do the hard thing that I can't do on my own. We gather strength from outside of us to do it.
Hmm. Sherry, you have a thought here before we go?
Yeah. Don't eat the whole container of almond roca.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. It's so funny. I shared a couple weeks ago, I guess, that my brother took his life. And I have been completely unzipped in this very painful season of my life. And Alice, you've been such a sweetheart. She's been praying for me. You, Steve, and Becky have been too. Everybody here at New Life, and I know some of the listeners have too. But you were texting me and saying, can I talk? Do you need to talk? I want to be there for you. And I said to you, I said, Alice, I want to do that. But I couldn't even open my heart up because I knew you were going to be asking me really good questions. And I thought, I'm going to just unravel. I'm going to cry. It's going to be a messy cry. And I was like, I do want to talk to you. And then you offered to bring me lasagna, and I'd eaten half the thing of almond roca already. And I was like, I'm back on Weight Watchers. But you know what I need right now? It feels like my comfort has holes in it. Like I can't hold comfort in, and I need to move towards Alice and others and give myself safe place to messy cry instead of eating the container of almond roca, which is trying to satisfy me in a way that's not helping.
Well, I'm so glad that you shared with us what you were going through, because a lot of folks don't want people to know anything about them, and so then nobody has the opportunity to step up and say, hey, you really matter. We care about you. We love you. We want to pray for you. And you're a great model for other folks. You know, maybe there's something in your life that is just so painful you don't want to look at it, talk about it. You know, I think it all starts by saying, okay, it's time for me to open up, get some help, see if somebody could do for me what I have not been able to do for myself. That's what we want for you. If you need some help, it's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. And let me say this, there are so many opportunities for you to get help online, through telecounseling, stuff like that, because of COVID. If you've never wanted to walk into a counselor's office to get help, it'd be probably less likely you'd ever have to do that than now. I mean, it's really a good time to get some help. If you need help, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. My thanks to the Female Brain Trust of New Life here. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next time. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.